Hello, and welcome to the second The Doctor and the TARDIS Forum podcast. I am Chrissy Marie B., and with me here in the United States is Iceman, otherwise known as Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hey, now.
And crossing the pond, we have with us today a very fine gentleman, Vampiros Adric, also known as Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing, Chrissy?
Very well, thank you. And last but certainly never the least, we have the Doc himself, our forum administrator, Ross. Hi, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
Once again today, we have a lot of great things to discuss, so let's get right to it. Ross, do you want to start us off?
Yes, certainly. We've got four main topics coming up for you today. We've got the a topic based around River Song and a deeper look into her character. We've got one based on fandom as a whole. We're going to be taking a look at the trailers and teasers for Doctor Who and Torchwood that have come out this week. And we're also going to be going in, first of all, to look at the writing team for Series 6.
Yeah, this is sort of a pet topic of mine, and I'll briefly tell you why. It's once I got very drunk with Terence Dix. That's the greatest claim to fame I have in the whole of the Doctor Who universe. I once got really drunk in a pub in Hampstead with Terence Dix. But that aside, writing and the writing of Doctor Who has always fascinated me. I don't know if you've watched any of the extras on the DVDs from the classic series, but one of the constant complaints of script editors was always they couldn't find anyone to write for Doctor Who. They couldn't find anyone who got the gist of how to write for Doctor Who. Looking at this year's writing team, looking at who we've got confirmed and unconfirmed, as usual, the showrunner Stephen Moffat is writing pretty much half of the season. As I understand it, and this is again from an unconfirmed sort of source, is that Steve Thompson is going to be writing the third episode. Steve Thompson, as I understand it, I don't know if anybody can help me here, but I think Steve Thompson worked on Sherlock with Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss.
Yes, the second episode, I looked it up.
Right, so he's obviously known and trust pair of hands. Moffat seems more than Russell T. Davis do. Moffat seems to have a sort of a group of writers that he trusts. We've got Mark Gatiss writing an episode in this. We've got Steve Thompson writing an episode in this. You know, there seems to be a band, Toby Whitehouse is returning as well. So there seems to be a band of writers that Moffat trusts. Coming in sort of from left field, we have a two-parter written by Matthew Graham. Which I think is I'm quite excited for. Now, Matthew Graham was responsible for the magnificent Fear, pause for hollow laughter. it was not one of my favourites, and I think generally, if you look at all the fan sites, they generally pan it to high heaven. And I think it's just an unfortunate episode where it's one of those things where a good writer with a reasonable idea, but it just didn't work. I don't know how anybody else feels about that.
The Fear episode for me was weak, and I tried to like it, and series two as a whole for me of the revived series was a really bad series, I think. But Fear Her was a particular low point.
If I remember correctly, Fear Her was a last minute episode. They had something else planned and they couldn't do it, so they scrapped it and had to write something really last minute and film it. So I mean, maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe if they had a little more time, or if they had a regular amount of time to do it, he could have done more with it. But I didn't like the episode either. So
anybody who has any experience in writing knows that everything that you write isn't going to be the best thing ever. And as Matt pointed out, you know, maybe that one particular episode, because it was rushed, it wasn't as good as it could have been. So, you know, I'm willing to give, you know, Matthew Graham the benefit of the doubt and, you know, not worry too much about the episodes until after I've seen them. So
I think as well, I think, as I say, looking at the writing team he's assembled, we've got some old favourites. You know, as I say, we've got Mark Gatiss, who again is another person who seems to really polarise fandom. Either you are a Mark Gatiss fan or you don't like him. And I find it strange. I mean, he's quite a talented chap, and I quite like him. I always find him quite personable. And, you know, for one reason or another, I happen to quite enjoy Victory of the Daleks as well. So I'm pretty much in the camp of liking Gatiss, but I know there are many people who don't like Mark Gatiss and are quite uncomfortable with the closeness of the Moffat-Gatiss relationship.
Well, the thing is like, I didn't know him before Doctor Who at all. I mean, I'm not familiar with a lot of the British writers and actors and stuff. But out of all the episodes that he's written, I've only really enjoyed one, and that was the one in season one he wrote. That was really the only one I really enjoyed of his.
Yeah, and he was involved in Sherlock as well, wasn't he?
He was co-executive producer. Yeah, he's certainly heavily involved in it.
I think another example is Toby Whithouse, who's a showrunner for Being Human, and you know he wrote Vampires in Venice, which didn't go over that well to a lot of people, but yet he does brilliantly at Being Human. So I don't know, lost that. But
it kind of goes back to what we were saying, what I said at the top about great writers not necessarily being right. A great fit Doctor Who, and that kind of brings me on to the big question mark for me in season six, and that Neil Gaiman. Now, you know, we're obviously going to talk more in more detail when the episode airs, but I don't ever think I've been more excited for a writer writing for Doctor Who than I have been for Neil Gaiman writing for Doctor Who.
I think it's going to suffer from how hyped it's been. I think it's going to be a good episode, but just the expectations people have for it, I know more people are going to be disappointed than if it was just a regular episode, just because of how high the expectations are. But, you know, a lot of people are comparing it to, you know, like Douglas Adams writing for the classic series. You have like this renowned author who has a huge fan base themselves that come to write for this show and they want to see what they can do.
For me, I'm not excited about Neil Gaiman. I'm not massively familiar with a lot of his work. I'm excited for his story because the things that we know about his story, I think, sound great so far. And there's going to be a lot in there that I think will be really good. And, you know, we've got the whole Idris and the connection to the War Games and all those things going on. So I'm quite excited for the content. But as for Neil Gaiman, I wouldn't say I'm particularly excited about him more than any other writer, because I'm not massively familiar with him as a writer anyway. So to me, it doesn't matter who's writing that episode. I'm excited for the episode, but anybody could be writing it.
I think what you generally find in terms of sort of going back to the writing and the writers, I think when you're writing for a show like Doctor Who, and I suspect it's the same for any sort of franchised show with a showrunner, is that there's going to be an element of compromise, and the writer's input is going to get dialed down by the executive producer, by the showrunner. So it's going to be, in many ways, you know, Moffat-flavoured Neil Gaiman and Moffat-flavoured Toby Whithouse and Moffat-flavoured Mark Gatiss. So I think for me, the writing is important, but the Simon Nye and the Richard Curtis episodes, they didn't scream a radical difference to me. They didn't scream a radical difference in the style. They didn't stick out in the seasons. So I wonder, you know, I wonder whether as writers, part of the deal is you're going to subvert half of your creativity to the actual showrunner. And you're going to say, there's my idea, there's my concept, now make it into a Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, I know Russell always said that the only person's script he wouldn't touch was Moffat's. You know, he would interject on the rest of them, but not Moffat's. I don't know if Moffat does that with anybody or not, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
I'm actually quite embarrassed because every post I put on the forum now tends to end up with, I'm really, really, really excited about season six.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've sort of got rid of all originality from my posts and it's now, bring it on, please.
I think, I mean, we are going off the writing topic slightly, but I think one of the things that is making the series seem like more of a big event and more exciting to people is because this year, and we touched about this in the last podcast as well, is that we know very little of what's going on. I mean, bits and pieces are coming out and we get the gist of what an episode is about and who's in it. But major plot details, they've really, really done their best this year to keep them under wraps.
Again, yeah.
I'm such a big fan.
What? Big what?
Fan. Number one fan, that's me.
How exactly are you a fan?
Another big part of Doctor Who is the fandom. I've been, you know, fans of a lot of shows, and the Doctor Who fandom is very unique to me. I'm relatively new to Doctor Who. I think I started watching in, I think 2009, I think the first live episode I saw was Planet of the Dead. So, you know, I caught up and stuff there, but I've noticed that they're kind of divided in groups. You know, you have like the classic Who fans who watch New Who. You have the New Who fans who don't care about the classic series. You have the people who just watched it because of David Tennant, who became fans because of that. You have like the kids who watch, who don't you know, dissect everything. They just like the cool guy who goes around in a box. You have same with the casual fans, and then you have the internet fans who, you know, kind of dissect everything. And I'm sure people fit into more than one group, but I think everybody could put themselves in one group and say, yeah, I'm mainly this and that. And that's just my perception of it, I guess. Yeah, the fandom definitely, it's hardcore and it's definitely divided, in my opinion.
I mean, I also haven't been, as everyone knows, I haven't been a fan all that long. I just started watching with season 5. But one thing that I can say, although my experience is not vast, is that the Doctor Who fandom community, particularly online, has been very welcoming. Like, no one has said to me, oh, you just started watching and all you've seen is New Who, so don't even talk to me. I have not had that experience. Even people who are very big fans of the classics have all been very welcoming, very happy to, like, hey, welcome aboard, welcome to the club, you know? Everyone's been very nice and very welcoming. Now, that doesn't say that I haven't heard of some of the nastier things that can happen in fandom, but I think that that's, you know, such is life. You know, there are some people in this world who aren't very nice, and therefore you're going to have certain people in fandom who aren't very nice. But my personal experience has been that everyone has been very nice and very welcoming, and I feel like I've been allowed into this extended family, which has been really a great experience for me.
For me, I mean, the reason I started the forum and the news page and the Facebook and everything is because I had such a bad experience with fandom. I'd been to another forum and it was absolutely horrendous. I mean, the one I went to was a relatively small forum, I found out at the time, but it was all about one-upmanship. I'm the bigger fan. I know more than you do. I know this before you know this, and all that kind of attitude. And it really drove me nuts. I can't stand, you know, if you're a fan, you're a fan. And if you're not a fan, then you're not a fan. I don't understand all these people who think there's some sort of hierarchy to fandom. And that was my the main reasoning behind me starting the forum, was to make sure that there was a place for everybody. And, you know, we do have all those sections for the people who just come in and they only like Sarah Jane Adventures, or they just come in and they only like the classics and things like that, but everybody gets on, and it's a really welcoming place, which I think fandom on the whole, I mean, Christine, you said you've had a relatively good experience, but I think from my perspective and the things that people tell me on the forum, fandom as a whole isn't always a very nice place to be, and I think some of the best places you can be when watching Doctor Who is away from the internet.
I think the problem is, and I say that I try to sound like an outsider here because I actually don't like fandom very much myself. I think it's, you know, it's not a healthy place in many ways. You're dealing with people who are obsessive, and you're dealing with people who are obsessive by nature. Now I am. I hold my hands up. That's part of that. You know, that's part of the reason why I have all the. I like to get all the box sets in order, and I like to make sure that all my box sets are in order on my shelf, and I like to make sure that all my box sets are in order on my shelf in order of episode as well. You know, so you're dealing with people who are obsessive. It's inevitable that there's going to be some sort of negative as well as positive connotations in that. I wouldn't know, Matt, you give a sort of a taxonomy of fandom, and I think it's really interesting because to me, when I watch Doctor Who, I'm an 8-year-old. So I don't quite know where I fit in on that, but I just know that the hierarchy that Ross speaks of is something that I recognize very much, and something that I don't think is a particularly pleasant aspect of it. I think fandom is something I tolerate rather than something I want to be a part of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, you say you're obsessive like that. I mean, I'm kind of like that too, but then I don't get these people who, like, wish ill of Matt Smith because they're not David Tennant, or the people who wish harm on his kid because they don't like his girlfriend or whatever. Like,
yeah, that was just obscene, wasn't it?
Or, you know, people who are sending Moffat hate mail because he's not Russell, and, you know, Moffat said several times, you know, me and Russell are friends. It's like, I didn't kick him out. He left. I don't deserve to get hate mail for that or anything like that. I just don't get that part of it. I mean, do they not know how the show works? There's been, I don't know how many showrunners there've been, you know, and there's been 11 doctors. And I mean, that's just part of the show. It changes, and that's what makes the show unique and stuff. So the people who keep saying, bring Tennant back, bring, you know, Russell back, I just don't understand it.
The whole thing, it's outside of Doctor Who, but of course it is still part of Doctor Who fandom. The whole thing with, because obviously David Tennant and George Moffat had a baby this weekend, And the things I was reading, the messages sent to me on Twitter and things like that from people, and the hatred towards specifically Georgia Moffat, not because they didn't like her, not because she did anything wrong, but she did have a baby by David Tennant. I mean, you know, like, how dare she? And the reactions, I mean, you know, I wish she'd dropped dead and stuff like that. I mean, I had one girl message me on Twitter saying how she trashed her bedroom. I mean, that to me is excessive. But it only takes one or two negative people to give the entire thing a bad name. I mean, going on to Torchwood, when Yanto died.
Oh, God.
I mean,
they're still going on about that.
Exactly. I mean, it's been 2 years now nearly since it happened on screen. And still, I mean, I've had people like shouting at me on Twitter for mentioning Yanto's name in posts that I'm putting on the thing for, you know, for Torchwood. Because how dare I associate him with him now, because that's, you know, Yanto isn't in it because they killed him off. And, you know, there's all this big, like, Russell T. Davis, the, you know, the gayest man in television, and you know, they accuse him of homophobia. He killed Yanto off because he hates right. gays and all stuff like that. I mean, it's ridiculous. The things people pluck out of their brains to attack people with, it's funny, but it's ridiculous.
I, for one, would like to give a very big congratulations to David and Georgia, because having a baby is a wonderful thing,
how
and I am
gorgeous.
So happy for them. You know, I can't wait to see pictures of this little baby, because I'm sure it's going to be this gorgeous baby, what with the genes of the parents. But I mean, but like Ross was saying, I don't understand these crazy people who are wishing them ill. It's like they're actors. They played a part in a TV show that is beloved by many people, but they have lives. You know, this is what
it's
you
just
do.
A job,
you
isn't
go,
it?
You fall in love and you know, get engaged, married, have babies. I mean, these are things that normal people do, and people need to separate, you know, the reality of these people's lives from the television show. And I can't understand a lot of the stuff that goes on with that. So
there seems to be, from what I can see, there seems to be a fine line in fandom, not just about David Tennant, about the show, about everything to do with the show, between being a fan and being obsessed. And I think some people can take it a bit too far. And it's good. It's good that the show goes out every Saturday and it evokes these things out of people. That's a good thing. It shows people are watching. It shows people are enjoying. But I think sometimes people take it a little bit too far. The way, you know, you can get attacked for liking a certain episode. You can get dogged down for liking a particular character and things like that. I think sometimes it goes too far. And I think it borders obsessive in that respect.
I would say, well, you know, the groups I mentioned, the showrunners, they're aware of them. They got to cater to the kids who watch casually. They got to cater to the internet fans. They got to cater, you know, to the classic people. They got to cater to all these people. So someone's going to be disappointed. I mean, it's not going to be perfect for everybody because there's so many different groups. And like I said, I know people don't exclusively fit into one group, but those groups do exist and they try and cater to everybody. And someone's always going to be disappointed.
Yeah, there's in fandom particularly right now, and I think going into the next series 6, the whole concept of River Song is very it's a dividing line. I mean, there are people who absolutely adore this character and think it is the best ever, and then there's other people who hate her with a passion. And the fact that she might have some sort of romantic relationship with the doctor is just like, oh my God, the horror. I mean, it's a very polarizing character.
Well, it's funny you should mention River Song there, Christine, because actually the next thing we're going to be talking about is River Song.
You, me, handcuffs. Must it always end this way?
River Song, I think, more than any other character, seems to bring out the largest contrast in fan opinion.
Do you think it's anything to do with the sort of history of Classic Who, where the Doctor was never, ever involved with any companion, and it was, you know, they never hinted at anything like that, and it was, you know, my best friend in the TARDIS, et cetera, rather than anything like that? Do you think it's something to do with sort of the historical way that the companion has been?
One thing that I hear more than probably any other complaint is people saying, I don't like that she knows more than the Doctor. But what people need to understand, I think, in that sense of the argument, is that her story at the moment is the fact that she knows more than the Doctor. And I know that sounds kind of contradictory, but that is the point of her story, that she likes more than the that she knows more than the Doctor. So you can't really dislike that, because that is the story. It's not just a case of, you know, if she came in and we knew everything about her, we knew who she was, where she was from, her connection to the Doctor, and she still knew more than the Doctor, I could understand why people might get their backs up about that, because the Doctor is supposed to be all-knowing. But, the way they've done it so far is that we don't know anything about it, so we don't know why she knows more than the Doctor. And there is going to come that point, because we seem to be going forward in her life and backwards in the Doctor's, or vice versa. And there is going to be that point where she's going to be asking all the questions, because they're going to get to the point where she's going to first meet the Doctor, and the Doctor's going to be the one saying, spoilers. And I don't, people need to realise that, this is kind of like two timelines going against each other.
Right. I don't think it's that she knows more. She just knows different things than the Doctor. Like, if you watch them together, when it's a dire situation or something, she always says, oh, I have faith in him. I'll let him handle it. He knows how to do it, all that kind of stuff. So it's not like she's saying, I'm taking over. She just knows different things than the Doctor, because, like you said, their timelines are different. So it's not that she knows more than him. She just knows different events that he will find out eventually.
I mean, one of the other things that a lot of people complain about is her characterization as a woman. Christine, I'm going to target you since you're a woman for the day. how do you feel about River Song as a woman? Not necessarily her backstory and what we know, but just what we know of her on the screen of the six episodes she's been in so far, the female character. What do you think about River Song?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm afraid that my answer might make some women very happy and other women very mad at me. But I mean, I think she's a great character as a woman, because I mean, she kicks ass. I mean, the Dalek was afraid of her. The Dalek was like, oh crap, this is River Song, have mercy on me. You know, she's a very strong character who doesn't take anybody's crap, and you know, she gets the job done. But at the same time, she hasn't lost what it is to be a woman, you know, that flirty, you know, playing around type of a thing, and spoilers and this and that. So I personally
think black leather too.
She does look good in black leather, although that's not my personal point, but yes, she does look good in black leather. I will have to agree with you on that. I think she's a great character. I do. I don't know if that's exactly the kind of answer that you were looking for, but I like that she is strong, that yes, she defers to the Doctor's expertise, but she doesn't necessarily need him. And I like the fact that we don't know anything about her, because it puts us in the same position as the Doctor for a change. You know, the Doctor doesn't know who she is, and neither do we. So we're kind of on the same page as the Doctor. Instead of him being so over and above us on everything, we're in the same place. So I think that's an interesting little thing there.
See, that's the other thing I'm afraid of, is one of the best parts of her character for me is the intrigue that we don't know. If we find out everything about her, is she still going to be as good of a character? I kind of relate this to, I used to be a Lost fan, and everything they would ask in that, every question they would pose in that show, the internet fans wanted answers to. They tried to cater to that, and when they gave them answers, the answers were such letdowns that it wrecked the initial mystery of it. It was almost better to not even answer it and just let the mystery go. And I'm wondering if this will suffer the same thing, or if that it'll all work out, because the intrigue, the mystery, the who is she to the Doctor, that kind of thing is one of the biggest draws to the character. And if we get that answered and it's not, perfect, I don't know if it'll wreck her character then.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, a lot of the people online, there's a lot of speculation about whether or not she actually is his wife in the future, because, she knows his name from Silence in the Library, and Amy even asked, are you his wife? And nobody answered, and, that whole thing. But personally, I will be disappointed if it turns out that she is his future wife, because for me, it's too easy of an explanation. It's too boring of a thing. It's too normal. So if that's the answer, I'll be disappointed, but I think I'll be able to handle anything else that the writers come up with, so long as it's not that. But I mean, if it is that, so be it, whatever. I'm not going to, cry about it, but my preference would be that it not be that.
Sort of going back to what Matt said about mystery and the reveal of mystery, I think that's often a big problem with the show, with Doctor Who itself. It started off for the first, what, 6 years of its life, we didn't know anything about the Doctor other than he was all-powerful and he travelled in a blue box. And that was it. That's all we knew about it. And slowly, the more the mystery gets pared away, the more this layer of canon gets built up, the more it seems to detract from the show, the more the show seems to have to back-reference itself. And I think kind of that's my only problem with River Song, that she's automatically got so much back-referencing to do that in a way it sort of obfuscates the storytelling in a way. I've no problem with the character. I think it's a really great, strong, intelligent woman, and I think it's brilliant to see. My only thought is the wrapping up of the character going to lead to the wrapping up permanently? Is this going to be it for River Song on the show?
In a way, I'm kind of dreading finding out during season 6 who she is. I'd rather hold on, because if it does mean that she's going to go, I would rather them hold out the reveal for maybe another year or so.
What I hope we don't get is another Rose Tyler situation, where every sort of end of season finale or every sort of special moment in the Russell T Davies era, up popped Rose. You know, it was almost like something special is going to happen. Aha, I know who we need. Call Billy Piper.
The thing that's unique with River is we know her end story. We know where she's going to end up. She's going to be in the database in the library. Now, I mean, if they really wanted to, I guess they could, you know, extract her from there and bring her back or whatever. But we know the end story with her. We know how it's going to end. We know what's going to happen to her. So she's not going to be around forever.
A weeping angel, Amy, is the deadliest, most powerful, most malevolent life form evolution has ever produced. And right now, one of them is trapped inside that wreckage, and I'm supposed to climb in after it with a screwdriver and a torch, and assuming I survived the radiation long enough, and assuming the whole ship doesn't just blow up in my face, do something incredibly clever, which I haven't actually thought of yet. That's my day. That's what I'm up to. Any questions?
Is River Song your wife?
For the last 2 weeks, we've been asking everybody via the forum to send in questions to us. I've chosen three of the best to put towards the team, and they're now going to be answered for you. The first one we've got is coming from Rebecca.
Why are the ducks on the duck pond if there are no ducks?
My answer to that question is, if you buy an empty fish tank and it's just a glass thing, it's still a fish tank. There's no fish in it yet. You don't have any water in it. You don't have the rocks, the coral, all that stuff. But it's still a fish tank. The same thing, like a shoebox is always a shoebox. Even if you put something else in there, it's not all of a sudden called, you know, your secret dirty magazine stash. It's so, you know, a duck pond, just because there's no ducks in there doesn't mean it's not a duck pond.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts on that is that if at one point in time ducks were in the pond, then it was a duck pond and the name sticks. And so you call it a duck pond. So very similar to what Matt was saying. So but I'm thinking that if at some point in time there were ducks in the pond, it can certainly be called the duck pond.
So question two is coming from the Dr. Donna, and he wants to know, after a year in charge, how is Moffat shaping up for you?
I think this is a question that we can't answer yet. I think ask us this in set, because I think right now this is the most critical phase of the Moffat's tenure. He's done the build-up work very, very well. What we had last year, what we had last season, was him laying the groundwork for a new Doctor. This time, we've had a lot more focus on the story and on the elements of that we're going to see in the next season. So I think the answer right now is he's the potential is to be amazing. He's a work in progress. He's I've loved what he's done so far. But if he delivers on what he's promised for season 6, then I think we're in for an amazing, amazing time.
Let me put it this way. I said this before, but this is the most excited I've ever been for an upcoming season, period. I enjoyed season 5, and I'm really looking forward to season 6, so I think he's doing great.
Okay, so the next question has come in from Hannah.
What do you think we can expect from the split in Series 6? Do you think that it will prove too popular and worthwhile, or is it just going to be one of BBC's ideas to help them try and boost their ratings and viewing numbers of other programmes?
Well, the funny thing is that over here in the States, it's very, very common for it to be split. A lot of the seasons, you know, they'll start in September. They'll run for 2 months because these are seasons that have, you know, like 26 episodes or something. They'll run for 2 months. They'll take, you know, 3 to 4 weeks off during Christmas. And then they'll come back in January or February and take another couple of weeks off and go to May. So it's very common over here to split the season. It's actually unheard of to have 13 episodes air in 13 weeks and that's it. So to me and Christine, it's not that foreign because it happens all the time over here and it works fine because, you know, then they can hype it more and do all that stuff. So I think it'll be fine. I know people aren't going to like hearing this, but it is a more American way of doing it, but it works over here and it's very common. So it doesn't really phase anybody.
Yeah, like Matt was saying, I mean, it's a very commonplace kind of a thing here. Now, I don't know what's on the fall schedule for BBC America. I read somewhere that they might be doing Luther again in the fall, and I read somewhere that they're going to be doing Bedlam as well, which I think you guys have already seen over there. So I don't know if they'll use Doctor Who as a lead-in to those in the fall to try to get more people watching it. So I don't know if they'll use the opportunity of the series being split to introduce more shows. Maybe they will. They'd probably be silly not to. But again, I don't know what their fall schedule is, so I don't know that they'll do that.
From a British perspective, and more than that, from a sort of a classic Who background, I'm used to my Doctor Who being on in the autumn. That's when, you know, that I'm used to Doctor Who being on in the dark nights. So from an English, you know, UK perspective, I think I have no problems with it insofar as it puts things back in the natural order. It may, you know, Doctor Who to me was always a winter show. It was always, you know, going back to school. The going back to school would be sort of ameliorated by the fact that at least we'd have Doctor Who back. So any attempt to shunt Doctor Who back to its natural order, I'm quite happy with.
Okay, then. So finally, what we're going to be discussing now is the prequels and the trailers and the teasers. Now, over the last week, 2 weeks, we've had a prequel for The Impossible Astronaut. We've had the US trailer. We've had the UK trailer. We've had a UK teaser. We've had a Torture teaser. What do you guys think of them?
The prequel was fantastic. It seemed like a teaser to like a big budget, like horror thriller or something. You know, it's set, if that's the tone the season is going to be, I'm really excited because that was fantastic. It gave me chills. As far as the two trailers, the BBC one and the BBC America one, they kind of took two different approaches. You get two different perspectives of that. And then, and the Torchwood teaser, there's not much to say because it was garbage. So, I did like the prequel and I hope we get more of them.
You know, I think that the prequel was great. It did a great job of setting the tone of what we're going to be looking at for the premiere, which I think is, like Chris says, I cannot wait for this season to start. I'm ready for it. But the trailers have been really good. And I think that more than anything, the people behind them are very, very savvy when it comes to marketing and promotion because they're putting things in the trailer. They're letting us see things that they know will create a flurry of excitement online. So everybody now is talking about it, thinking about it. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? So my anticipation is that the ratings are going to be huge because everybody's going to be checking it out to see, oh my God, what's going to happen? So by doing these trailers and choosing the scenes that they have in them, they've done a brilliant job of really getting the hype going about it with their choices, which I think is a really neat thing that they did.
I mean, one word sums up all of the trailers that I've seen for the new season. Just awesome. It's magnificent. I've never had a build-up to a season like this. It's, you know, we've all sort of said it. We've all danced around the same thing. Our anticipation levels have been raised to such a level, and that's got to be credit to the production team. That's got to be credit to the way that they've managed the release of season six. And I think, again, what we have now is much more focus on the story and where the story is going to go, where we're going to go. Last time it was very much meet the Doctor. This time it's not. This time it's this is what's going to happen. This is what the stakes are. This is where we're going to go. Oh, fantastic.
For me, when I first saw the trailers, I start with the teasers first. The teasers they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They teased, and I couldn't wait to see more. And when the trailers finally came out, and the UK and the US ones, they were just brilliant. And I think the really good thing, and what they've done in the past, is the trailers have been relatively similar. And these two trailers were pretty much polar opposites. So we have double the amount of little bits of info. And I mean, they don't tell us anything. But I mean, you know, you freeze it down. And I know I, for one, on the forum, I've been freezing all the pictures down. I've screen-capped everything so we know every image. And, you know, you see these things, like the monsters, or somebody shooting a gun, or a spaceship. And every picture, you know, makes you ask 100 questions. And you think, oh, my God.
I said, I remember when they showed the Season 5 trailer, people were up in arms about the Doctor firing a gun. They're like, what could he be shooting? What, you know, why would he use a gun? Everybody was mad about it. And, you know, it turned out to be nothing of that sort. You know, he shot it at the light thing for the trap. But, I mean, you know, it's that's an example I like to use, because everybody was like, why is he shooting a gun? He hates guns, that kind of thing. So I think there's going to be a lot of that in there. So after Season 6 airs, if we watch the trailer again and be like, oh, well, this means this, they threw us off this way, that kind of thing. So I think it would be really interesting to go back and look, because if you go back now and look at the Season 5 trailer, you'll see what they did, and then and you'll see what it really meant. And it's kind of interesting to see both sides.
Yeah, but if the purpose of the trailers is to hype it up, I think that they're definitely being successful on that front, because you know, everybody is just chomping at the bit to get to the 23rd.
They really are. And I think Torchwood this year has been really blown out of the water by the Doctor Who trailers, because we have had a little Torchwood teaser as well that's come out this weekend, and but nobody likes it. to put it mildly, nobody likes it.
If someone just watched the teaser, you'd have no sense at all that, first of all, that this is the fourth season. You'd have no sense at all that it's a spinoff of another show. You would have no idea of any of that. You would think it's this brand new show, because it's, you know, it's saying a Starz original series. It doesn't say anything, mention anything about the other season. So I don't know. I'm not going to fully judge it until I see it, but I'm not getting my hopes up right now.
Because I know Torchwood, because I know how good it's going to be. A bad trailer doesn't faze me, because I know I can still tune in and think it's brilliant. But if I was new, if I'd never heard of Torchwood before, that wouldn't grab me. That wouldn't make me want to watch.
I think the whole thing about Torchwood this year is how quickly it all seems to have been knocked together. Do you know, it seems like we went from zero in October to, oh, well, we're going to start filming in January. Oh, we've finished filming the end of January. We've done everything. You know, it seems like it's all happened very quickly. And that trailer was sort of typical of something that had been knocked together. Now, I'm sure that's not the case, because the writing team that Rusty's assembled is pretty phenomenal. And we all know how good Russell is himself. So, you know, it none of it is boding well. And yet there's a big part of me that just says, okay, we'll judge it on its merits. But there's no sense of the build-up that we've got for Season 6 of Doctor Who.
All right, so that's all that we have for you today. I hope you enjoyed our very interesting and varied discussion. So until next time, I bid you a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.